Hi, you're listening to the My Body, My Story podcast.
And I always struggled that, you know, I could never access that deep base in me. And if you, you know, look into like just the body and even like chakras, that's the base chakra. And I realized I was avoiding that. And that's your childhood. That's your insecurity, you know, and that groundwork, that foundation wasn't set for me. And so I haven't wanted to access that part of me. So that's been really interesting to see what comes up when I do take those deep breaths. And I usually cry, which is sad.
This is the 45 over 45 chapter where we celebrate rule breakers and role models, the women who inspire us to live life our way and to show their sensuality, beauty, soul, and true essence. Here, we talk about what it's like to be 45 plus, adjusting to the changes that come with time, and we listen to the stories of our participants. If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a K-S. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the My Body, My Story project. And today with us, Courtney, in the studio. And while she's sitting in the makeup chair and Leora is doing makeup for her, I'll be asking a few questions. Hi, Courtney. Welcome to the studio and welcome to the project. And let's start and tell us 10 facts about yourself.
Thank you. I gotta keep it to 10?
No. No, you can.
I wish I was actually that interesting. I think more. I wish I was that interesting. Yes, hi, I'm Courtney. I'm 42. I am from Texas. And I was reflecting on my drive here this morning that I moved here when I was 24. So I thought that was really special that I was 24, now I'm 42. So it sort of mirrors each other.
Yeah.
And so here I am in this chair. I am married. I have two kids, two boys. One's 12, one's 10. Mm-hmm. And we just got a new puppy, which is our first pet ever. Oh, wow. So it's very special for our family.
What's the breed?
We bought a miniature Labradoodle, mm-hmm. and he's chocolate brown. Mm-hmm. And he's super cute. And we've named him Nacho.
Nacho, oh.
little throw to my Texas roots.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, and so I was in the U.S., born and raised in Houston, Texas, but then went to university on the East Coast in Virginia. Mm-hmm. I played field hockey on a Division I team for an NCAA, in the NCAA division, and loved sport. That's how I identified myself, was as an athlete. Mm-hmm. And so it's been interesting as I've gotten older, how, especially having kids and getting married, I have lost a lot of the thing, the active sporty courty that I used to identify so strongly with.
Why did you didn't have enough time?
Well, it's interesting because my husband, he plays semi-professionally a sport, mm-hmm. now, and so it seems like all of our time nurtures that hobby or that sport for him. Mm-hmm. He's a polo player, mm-hmm. and so our whole life is horses. So it's sort of funny. I'm from Texas. I'm not even from a farm, but like I'm from a big city, but now we live out in a rural area, a semi-rural area outside of Sydney, with a little horse farm. And I feel more Texan here than I did
at
home.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But I never fit in at home. So that's sort of, I guess, something I've always reflected on is, why did I even leave Texas? So I left Texas when I was 18 years old, and I haven't been back.
So where did you go?
And I miss it. So I went to university for 4 years. Then I moved to Washington, D.C., and I got my dream job, or dream company. I wanted to work for the Discovery Channel.
Oh, wow.
And I just harassed them until they hired me. And I just kept showing up because it was a two-hour train ride from my university.
Yeah.
And I would just go up there. And anyway, I was able to get a position after graduation. Mm-hmm. And I loved living in Washington. One of my sisters lived there as well. And it was just a great time. I look back on that time in my 20s. And it was just awesome. Just fancy, foot and free. Washington, D.C. is a very walking friendly city. And I just I just feel like I walked everywhere. And it was lovely. And I loved the company I worked for. But then I started getting a bit antsy because I thought, I'm working for the Discovery Channel, but I'm not discovering anything. I'm not, you know, amongst the content that they're filming. And that's where I want to be. I want to be on set. And I just kept saying, I was like, please send me anywhere, any of the global offices, I'll go, you know? And they were like, look, you have to be, you know, like a senior vice president or higher to get transferred to get a visa and, you know, all the things now that I realized.
You just make me vice president.
I know. I was like, well, then make me a vice president. And I was like, by the time I'm that old, I'm not going to want to be thrown around. I'm not going to go anywhere. I don't want to be uplifted anywhere and drop somewhere and, you know, Africa or somewhere.
Yeah, I was going to say in Congo or something.
I know. I think I remember telling my boss, I was like, I just really, because my degree was in anthropology. So I got my degree in anthropology. So I thought, I just want to live with a tribe. I just put me in this tribal setting and just totally wild. And that has always sat within me, in my base, in my core. Like, I still crave that. I just finished watching Alone Australia. I don't know if you guys have seen that. And there's this amazing badass, Gina, who's on the show. And she just is one with nature. And she knows how to live and survive in the wild environment of Tasmania. Mm. And she kicks ass. And I'm like, I want to be Gina. And so, but here I am, you know, wearing normal clothes, eating food from the grocery store. And I'm like, this is not right. So today, I have a landscaper at my house completely... ripping up my garden and putting in a full-fledged veggie patch with all raised beds. And I'm so excited because this is me being more Courtney. This is like a Courtney garden would be growing my own veggies. Mm. Like, come on, like for real. That shouldn't even be hard. Like, that's a no-brainer for me. And so that's nurturing. So that's genuinely nurturing that hobby. But going back to D.C., when I was antsy and kind of wanting to get out and explore the world, I found a friend who was willing to go on a round the world ticket with me. And I was like, let's just quit our jobs and travel. You know, let's take a year off. And in America, we're not really accustomed to doing that. We don't have a gap year.
Oh, really?
That concept doesn't exist. So we got a lot of pushback.
Yeah.
My family was like, are you kidding? You're going to have a gap in your resume. You're working for this great corporation and you're going to leave that? And I was like, yeah. And what was funny is in the meantime, I actually had met an Australian because Aussies were doing what they do best and traveling the world. And, you know, and so I met this guy and I was only 19 actually when I met him. But then he ended up moving to America and then he moved back to Australia. And so I was in my head, my little 20-something-year-old head, I was like, okay, I'll do this round-the-world ticket and then go to Australia on route and see him and see what that's like. So along the way, I lived in London for about, I think, 5 months I was in London. And again, it was that magical time of being in my 20s. And London's just like D.C. in terms of it's so walking friendly. And I just remember walking everywhere and just through the park. I loved it.
I love London.
I loved it. I lived in Holland Park. And it was just really special time. Again, super fun. Had a great group of friends there. But then I started feeling this pull from Australia. My boyfriend, when are you going to get down here? Come on, what are you doing over there? You know, and hurry. And interestingly, I had this awesome itinerary booked. I was supposed to go to India, like to Goa. And I was supposed to go to Bali and Vietnam. And every single place on my itinerary ended up having a natural disaster that year. Wow. So there was like this incredible earthquake in India. There was tsunami in Thailand. I was supposed to go to Thailand. There was the shootings in Bali. So it's not a natural disaster, but it's a disaster.
So
I canceled the itinerary. Even when I moved to London, it was during the bombings in the tube.
Oh, wow.
And like, it was just like, I was like, I don't think this is the year to travel.
Yeah, it was just pushing you to Australia.
Yeah, and so it was just interesting just seeing even what's happened in the world since then.
Yeah.
It's not gotten better. I mean, there's just been an earthquake in Morocco. And so it's just, thank goodness I did get a little bit of time to be overseas. But it still feels like I didn't get to complete my itinerary. And so anyway, I got to Australia. I remember being here for a few months and feeling that sense of being antsy again.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I just really want to go somewhere again. Like, this is too normal now. And my sisters were like, Courtney, you live in Australia. Are you kidding? That's so exotic. I'm like, no, it's not. It looks like America, you know, like, except for it has beautiful beaches and, you know, and they're like, you live in a holiday location. What are you thinking? And so I ended up breaking up with my boyfriend, but I had a great job. So I guess another sort of, if I had to be concise with my 10 facts about me, like just another moment was, I started my career in the environmental industry here in Australia. I'd gotten a glimmer of it in London, and I loved it, specifically the waste and recycling industry. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was my calling. I thought it was very interesting how different countries manage their waste and materials, and I'm from a country or a state that's very wasteful. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a really in that sort of society, and it just never felt right. My roommates in college on the East Coast of the U.S. introduced me to recycling. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I just felt so Texan. I don't know. I was just like, huh? Why would you do that? And like, and they, I remember they would reuse their sponges, you know, after doing a wash up of the dishes. And I was like, why are you keeping that? Why don't you just throw it away after every time? And they were like, are you kidding me? And that's how, that was just so ingrained in me. That's yucky. That's germy. And so that's from that point of view. So then for me to completely go, oh my God, that is so wrong.
I just need to ask, in Texas, they don't use sponges a few times, they throw it?
Well, I think, okay, so in my house, I can only talk about my house.
Yeah.
We were very much, there was never dish towels. You always use paper paper towels.
To avoid
always
germs.
A paper towel, just anything you wipe. So that was that. Our bath towels were washed every day.
What?
So that's different. I do think my mom had a sponge, but I mean, it always looked pristine. So who knows? I never managed that part of the house. It would have not been a single use item. It would have been reused, but if it got yucky, it was out. Mm. And so, and the amount of rubbish, like you should see the trash cans that are put out on the street, the wheelie bins, they are massive. I used to take pictures of them because once I got into the waste and recycling industry here, I was fascinated to see how we were managing it here.
Yeah.
And even just when I did go overseas, I was always taking pictures of bins. I just thought that was so interesting. I'd be in the Singapore airport and I'd see all these bin categories. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know you could have three or four streams, you know? And so that was now going back 20 years ago. So it's fun to see it now. 20 years later, America's caught up. Once America gets onto something, they really go for gold and they do it. They do it the best. So like it's, but the mindset is not quite there yet naturally where you would sort of separate. Like in Texas, I don't actually think there's as much recycling as I would like.
My question, which always bothers me here, is this coffee paper caps, are they recycling or not?
Because okay, I'm going to answer your question. Okay.
On the train station, they say it's not recycling and somewhere.
So this that's is a life, this biggest quiz. Life journey, yeah. You've got the right girl sitting in the seat.
Yeah.
And you're going to be disappointed because it's unfortunately, it's not black and white. And so I'll give you kind of the explanation of what to do with that cup. Okay.
Yeah, solve my problem.
I will solve the paper cup. So a coffee cup in Australia, and I'm sure it's elsewhere as well, has paper fiber and then a polyethylene plastic liner inside. You can't see it. It's in between the paper fiber, the paper board. If you take that cup and put it in a paper mill, which is going to break down the fibers and then make new paper out of it, it's going to just sort of clump on itself because that plastic liner is just going to become a ball. And you're not going to get, it's called the pulpability rate. Mm-hmm. It's not very pulpable. The point is you're not going to get a lot of paper out of a cup. So they don't really want a big batch of coffee cups coming into their mill.
Okay.
They want newspaper. Think about newspaper. It just if you put that in a big vat of hot water with, detergent, it's going to break down, become very pulpable. But before you even get to the paper mill, you have to be at the recycling facility, and this is where the problem is. So the mill can handle a coffee cup. They just don't want a truckload of them at once. They'll mix it in with office white paper or what have you. Same thing like when we used to have phone books. Phone books telephone books had really a thick bit of glue on the binding, if you remember those days.
Yeah.
And they never wanted just a big truckload to arrive of that because that glue would become a problem in their process. Mm-hmm. But even going back from that, if you're at the recycling facility, which is where all of our stuff goes first, it's called a MRF, Material Recovery Facility. All of our stuff that we diligently separate into our bins at home go to these facilities. And they just dump it on a conveyor belt, and the conveyor belt with some people and then also just some devices and technology throughout the facility separates the paper, the glass, the aluminium. When it gets the paper cup, it doesn't know what it is. Mm. It's like, is it a bottle? Because of the shape, it's a container. It looks like a container to the facility. Mm-hmm. And this is rudimentary. This is basic technology. This is not fancy. They've tried to add fancy like lasers and stuff, but or infrared sensors, not lasers, to detect the polymer types and da-da-da. So the cup is paper and plastic, and it's a shape that is not like a flat piece of paper. Flat pieces of paper and cardboard go through beautifully. Mm-hmm. They make their way to the paper stream. But anything shaped like a water bottle ends up in the plastic stream. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I take the coffee cup, I flatten it like paper, and I put it in the recycling bin, knowing that they don't really want it, but they can handle it. Mm. That's my story. That's my explanation.
Wow.
Was that nice and sharp?
Yeah, you closed my gestalt, like your unsolved problem is solved.
There's no easy way to explain it, though.
What about, can I ask a question?
The compostable ones?
What about, takeaway containers and stuff, like plastic takeaway containers, right? My mum, I grew up with recycling like drilled into me.
Yeah.
And she still to this day washes like every single thing that comes through.
Yeah, you don't have to do that.
Yeah. You can just chuck it in the bin, right?
Yeah.
And
they'll
just deal with it.
Like if you've had butter chicken, don't do that. Like don't
send this
that.
Episode.
This episode is going to be very helpful. But like it's confusing though, because the recycling facilities feed back this information. And you know what's so funny, Leora?
Yeah.
The other Leora that I know, this was her job for Visi. So it was to communicate to householders what to put in the right bin. She was the marketing manager for Visi for many years. And I'm smiling just thinking of her because that was her job, because it was really hard to explain to householders what to put in each bin, right?
Yeah.
And we used to have to separate paper, glass, aluminium. Now we can all put it in one bin, which is called a commingled collection, which is a lot easier. When you go to England, you still have to separate brown glass, green glass, clear glass. Like you, households have many bins overseas, which is why I always took pictures. Because I was like, wow, we have it so easy here. Mm. But the recycling facilities will feed back to you, please give us clean containers. Because if you do send something, imagine like a gross pizza box with cheese still on it, or a takeaway container with buttered chicken or gravy, or, you know, whatever is. Like the point is, when that gets to their facility, they do have rat problems. Like they you know, it's a warehouse, and then they have to squash all the materials into these 1-ton bricks, like they're called bales, to then be collected and then sent to a manufacturing facility.
Yeah.
So if it does have food residue, it's not ideal, right?
Yeah.
But when it gets to that next place, they put it through so much hot water and processing, it kills all, it's okay.
Yeah.
So I just think, don't be a dick. Like, don't like, you know, like have it be full of stuff.
Yeah, just rinse it
like out. If I have a salsa that maybe has gone bad, or, you know, I'll empty it out. I might even just use some like dishwater that's already there and just kind of give it a But I do not put it in the dishwasher. Mm. I do not hand wash it. Absolutely not.
Nice. So you work now with this in that industry here in Australia?
So I guess going back to that moment in time, I love recycling and I loved my job. I finally found this job that just really just made my heart sing, and I gave it my all. I was there for 9 years, this first job that I had when I moved here, and this is when I met my now husband. And so it was a really exciting time because it's why I stayed here. Mm. And now I've been here for almost 20 years. And my career has taken some really fun adventures and turns and twists. My last job was being the sustainability consultant to Harris Farm Markets, which is a food retailer here in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I got to get this insider view of where our food comes from and how it's packaged and what do customers do when they take it home. Like, it was just, it kind of like was the missing piece of just, you know, now I'm in the decision seat to go, well, what do we actually put our strawberries in? Or the fresh cut salad or the whatever.
In what container?
And it became really murky waters because you want to preserve the food and that has a different packaging requirement than having something that's recyclable or not plastic. Because in the meantime, there's been the war on waste that's been broadcast through the, I think it's ABC promoted that. Which was so impactful because everyone woke. I've never heard people talk about coffee cups as much as I. Like, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, "Wow, everyone cares now." You know, like no one used to care. Mm. And I set up recycling programs for all the major stadiums in Victoria and New South Wales. Mm. I set up recycling programs for Qantas Airlines, hospitals, KFC. Every single KFC in the country has a recycling program. And that was a project that I got to be a part of. And it was exciting, but no one cared at the time. And then all of a sudden, everyone started being like, wait, we should really recycle. And I'm like, oh, God, that's so refreshing to hear everyone now being on board. Because part of my job was trying to convince, you know, teenagers at a KFC outlet to choose the right bin. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I really welcomed this new enthusiasm from society. It became part of pop culture. Mm. And now it's gone beyond that. It's now a climate change issue, and it's now a survival, and it's unfortunately become a political issue, but it's very much an ecological one. Mm-hmm. And so that's where there's a lot in between that first job setting up recycling programs when I first moved here, to then being able to advise a major food retailer. But it has filled my soul. But it's also completely bled me dry because I gave myself to it because I deeply believed in it. And I felt like I needed to do something to help. And in the meantime, I've become a mom, a wife, you know, and I just, I kept experiencing burnout. Mm. And so that's definitely part of my journey. I've had two acute situations where I've had a nervous breakdown. And it's like, wow. And it's that question of when's enough and not. Like, when am I going to finally realize, like, I'm giving too much? Like, I am not filling my bucket back with what I need to keep going. Because that's actually not sustainable. Like, I'm trying to promote sustainability, and yet I can't keep going. I'm not going to get anywhere. I'm not going to have any impact. And so that's where I'm at now, is having to take time off for health reasons. I mean, like, what?
I think it's a normal cycle for anyone to be full of energy and then a bit low energy. And I don't know if it's something to do with the aging as well. And moving to this part of interview, I want to ask you, what does aging means to you? At your 42, you're still young.
Well, it's interesting because I wrestle with it. I had someone recently tell me that as we get older, especially as women, we move more into a yin stage. Mm-hmm. So if you think of yin and yang is very active, and yin is a little bit more calm and reserved and receiving rather than giving. Mm-hmm. And in my little head, I'm like, but I'm not ready to just receive. But then I think it is, I can hear that calling in me. I'm like, it's more out of need to be more yin. So for me, aging is that balance of yang and yin. Even I guess when I was 20, I wish I could have had a bit more yin, a bit more calm, because I think that would have balanced me out and I could have kept going more in a more sustainable, balanced work-life fashion. I think that's how I feel about aging.
But if you could go back to any age, what it would be, why, and what advice would you give yourself at this age?
I forgot that was one of the questions. I loved that time in Washington, D.C. as a young 20-nothing-year-old Courtney. Genuinely filling my cup with what brought me joy. Going for walks in the park, catching up with friends. I think I miss that as an older adult. Mm. Actually makes me a bit teary thinking about it. Mm. And I'd like to tell the Courtney of her 20-year-old self, to still honor that, those interests, mm. because they are important. Work is important, yes, but life's not all about work. Mm. Even though I got a lot of joy from what I did, I needed to balance it with the more of the fun side.
For yourself. Mm.
Yeah, it's a very, this question usually pulls out some emotions. So, talking about body image and changes, we spoke about that before the interview, and you told me that you noticed some changes. But first question I want to ask, if your body could talk, what do you think it would ask you or tell you now, at your stage now?
I think my body would say to be more accepting. Mm.
Just accept me more.
That makes me really, I know I'm giggling, but I'm actually really about to cry. Because yesterday I was having this chat. I've got this lovely counselor that I speak to, because I have had a lot of body positivity struggles in the last few years. And, I'm just getting situated in my chair. Thank you, lovely Leora.
You're welcome.
I think I need to be easier on myself, that internal critic thing. Because what's interesting is, even when I was super fit and young, I still didn't feel at home in my body. And so I think if my body could tell me something, it's just be at home. This is your home. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what size it is, what shape. I am actually really grateful that I don't feel burned out anymore. Mm. And even though I'm not the same size or shape that I used to be, and I struggle with that, I feel better. Like in terms of that mind-gut connection that is often referred to. I've done a lot of reading and research about that personally. I find that fascinating. And that is at more peace than it has ever been in my life. And I find that really fascinating, that I don't like the way my body looks, but I do like the way I feel more and more inside.
Do you understand your body more? Like what does it want? Or you know, like sometimes for me, it was always a problem that people say, you have to listen to your body. And I was like, how?
I hated that question. What? I hate it when people, or that suggestion, people
I don't
would
hear
say,
my body.
Listen to your body. And I remember when I had my first breakdown at work, I was like, I was sitting in this doctor's office and I'm like, I don't know what it says. Like they actually told me to go, I remember I was at Balmoral Beach, which is this beautiful beach that I lived near. I never went because I was always so busy with my kids and work. And here I was, and the prescription was, Courtney, go sit on a bench and look out at beautiful Balmoral Beach. I couldn't have been more restless in that on that park bench. It would have been funny to look back on me, you know, to see someone looking at this woman so fidgety on this bench, not being present, not being mindful, you know, just hating the experience of sitting still. Mm. Couldn't stand it. And so I think my body was actually screaming at me. I went to a healer in Bondi, this lovely man from Uzbekistan. His name was Abra, which I loved because it's like abracadabra. So it couldn't be more like, you know, alternative if I tried. And he goes, Courtney, he goes, your body is a living being. It has feelings. And he goes, imagine when a little kid is not listened to. They get upset and they start to throw a tantrum. He goes, your body, you're not listening to your body, so now your body's starting to have a tantrum, and it's trying to get your attention. Mm. So that's why your hip hurts. That's why this hurts. That's why that. Like, and it's just going to go, oh, you still don't hear me? Oh, how about I double down and get even tighter? And so, like, for me, like, that is my, like, my stomach, my gut health goes, like, my digestion goes, and my legs get super tight. Mm. So I have really poor digestion. And I think that's how my body handles stress, is it starts to slow down there. And then, yeah, my legs are like chronically tight. So I'm like this.
So you cannot digest what is going on and you don't want to walk forward.
Oh, that's so meaningful. That's so powerful. Because when I still seek specialists, either they be alternative or conventional. And more, both camps come to me and they're like, Courtney, this is an emotional issue. And I'm like, what? Like, you're not processing your emotions. You're not moving them through your body. They're getting stuck. And you need to move them through. And I'm like, whoa. And, you know, it's just, and so that's been a whole journey in itself. And I thought, what an interesting advice. Like, I literally went and got a colonoscopy to see if there was something wrong with my colon. And they're like, nope, healthy as. And I'm like, really? Nothing? It was just funny. Like, I'm like determined to find something physically wrong. And it's not physical. It's 100% emotional. Mm. I'm like, gah. Anyway, that's where that's at.
So where do you think that, what do you think are the main causes of body image issues?
Unfortunately, for me, it comes from the family I grew up in and the society I grew up in. I think there's too much focus on what you look like in the South, in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can imagine that sort of Southern belle, you know. And Texas doesn't really quite fit that bill. That's more like Georgia, Mississippi, you know. But we are still Southern, and we are, you know, it's a pretty well put together society. Everyone looks great, which could be seemingly wonderful. Like when I go to Madrid, everyone looks fabulous in Madrid. I'm like, what are they doing here? Like everyone, men and women, look great. Mm-hmm. But the emphasis, I think, too much on me as a little girl was how I looked, not who I was. Mm. And I think that's sad because I can even hear it in my voice with my kids. I want to be like, oh, you look so cute, or oh, you look so handsome. And then I'm realizing I need to actually, yes, have that salt and pepper around them. But the basis should be, like the comments from me as their mom should be more about, gosh, you are... I just love how curious you are. Well, I love how playful you are. Like more of, you know, just letting them know more of who they are, I think is important. Because I don't feel like anyone ever taught me who helped guide me in who I was. So I'm still figuring it out as a grown woman. Like, who am I? You know, what is Courtney like? Or what am I good at?
Or maybe you should just remove this word, you look so cute, you can say you are so cute. You know, just removing one word can make a difference.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even just like, I think just taking it back from appearances, I want my kids to feel good in their body. And hear, because I never felt at home in mine. Mm. And I can already hear my 12-year-old make comments about his body and it just breaks my heart. Oh. And so I'm probably too much aware of what I say because I really want to pat it out with how wonderful and smart they are and active and healthy. And I mean, he said he wanted to go on a diet and I'm like, are you kidding? I go, don't ever say the D word in this house again. And we eat really healthy and I'm all about fresh food and no artificial ingredients. And so I realized maybe I've talked too much about that in his life because we haven't had a lot of junk food. And now when I try to give him a treat, he's like, no, no, mom, I shouldn't. And I'm like, oh no, I've created a monster. but yeah, I'm, like I said, my family and I hate to, you know, point the finger at them, but we are a super health conscious, body conscious family. I mean, I had my grandmother tell me that the skin fold on the back of your hand is how much fat you should have all over your body. And if you pinch the back of your hand, there's no fat. And that's what I was told as a teenager. So that's not healthy. And my grandfather knew his percentage of body fat and used to tell us it was 11%. And he was trying to get to single digits. Like, these people were not bodybuilders.
Where did they get this from, your grandparents?
I don't know, because that would have been from a different time that I don't even know what their parents were like. You know, I think my grandmother was an only child. She's a little girl. And maybe her mom just made it all about, and she's beautiful. I mean, my family's stunning. Everyone's so beautiful, but they couldn't feel more insecure. It's like this toxic trait that needs to be healed. Because I've seen it in my aunts and my cousins. We all talk about it now openly, which I think is going to help heal it. Because I actually said, after COVID, I hadn't been home in a few years. And I was super fit. And yet, my first thought when I finally booked my plane, I hadn't seen my family in 3.5 years. My first thought was, I need to lose weight before I go home. That's really bad. And so when I was sharing that with my cousins, they go, oh my God, Courtney, that's what we think too. Whenever we go to a family gathering, we need to lose weight.
Yeah.
That is I'd love to unpack that with a psychologist one day. Be like, that's not right, right? Like, that's really bad. So I don't know where that stems from, you know, originally. But it's toxic.
So you already touched on that, but just if we go deeper into the subject, how do you think it can affect relationships, this body image?
That's an interesting question, because that came up yesterday with my counselor. I was telling her with, you know, in anticipation of today, I go, oh, you know, here I've gained so much weight in the last year and a half, and I'm really challenging myself having a photo taken, because I want to feel good in my body. I want to feel like I'm embracing my body and of this new mentality that I'm trying to nurture. And she goes, Courtney, she goes, I have a lady that came in, and she was with her husband in a session, and she was talking about how, oh, I've gained weight. And she goes, her husband goes, well I guess a bigger playground to play with. And I thought, that is so lovely. Who is that man? Because that is a really special thing to say. And he said it in just a fun, loving way, where I think in terms of relationship, it is on us how we feel about our bodies. And I don't feel comfortable in my body, and I'm trying to. And I can see that I hide myself from my husband. But I do think also it would be really great. I'd love to raise sons that say that to their wives one day if for some reason, you know, they get, you know, like if something, you know, just to be accepting of their partner.
But imagine your husband would tell you this. Would you feel better, or you would still?
I think it would have to be not a one-off. It would have to be something that I felt so comfortable in my skin personally, mm-hmm. and that he always, you know, was feeding me little, you know, niceties and compliments that I actually felt like I believed him. Because if he were to say it, I'd be like, you read that in a book. Yeah. You know, like someone told you to say that. Yeah. You know, like it'd have to be a genuine feeling.
Yeah.
If that groundwork had already been established.
How do you overcome your body-related insecurities when they come up? Or like now you said you have that, so what's your method?
So I've learned the beautiful art of deep breathing. Mm-hmm. I am somebody who, I didn't realize this, but ever since I was a little kid, I've actually held my breath. Mm-hmm. I've learned to suck in my stomach and hold it. And so it's been really a journey to just relax into my stomach and take one of those deep belly breaths that, mm-hmm. you know, we learn in yoga or wherever. And I always struggled that, you know, I could never access that deep base in me. And if you, you know, look into like just the body and even like chakras, that's the base chakra. Mm-hmm. And I realized I was avoiding that. And that's your childhood. That's your insecurity, you know, and that groundwork, that foundation wasn't set for me. And so I haven't wanted to access that mm-hmm. part of me. So that's been really interesting to see what comes up when I do take those deep breaths. And I usually cry, which is sad. But it does help. I don't mind crying anymore, because I cry so much now.
And it lets your emotions out.
And it's that processing of emotions that we spoke about before that I am trying to get better at. So I put my hand on my chest and my hand on my belly, and I take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. And that helps me to, it's like a little hug from my body and myself. And I've noticed it makes me feel better.
So what did you do when you were younger? What's the difference in your methods?
When I was younger?
Yeah.
Feeling good about myself or sucking in my stomach?
So now you learn to breathe. And before, when you felt insecure in your body, what did you do?
Oh my goodness, what did I not do? I was so rebellious as a teen, mm-hmm. a young teen, like even 12 years old. I think I just was always trying to get attention, whether it be good or bad. And so I think I would overcompensate for my insecurity, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like literally the black lipstick, the big, you know, I had the, I'm admiring Lior's shoes, but like I had the big black Doc Martens in the 90s, you know, I thought it was so cool. And, but the way I was going about it, I was trying to embarrass my mom and my family. You know, I was trying to be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Was my little cheeky way of handling my insecurity, I think. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, to balance that, because I was also a good kid, I played sport. And I think that was so important, not just in terms of being active, but also being on a team. Mm-hmm. And having other young women around me that we're all high-fiving. You know how we are in America, like, go team! You know, like, we really, I miss that. Camaraderie in a, yeah. in a team. I think we can all, you know, quickly access that feeling of, oh, it feels so good to be around other girls. Yeah. And you hear somebody else go, oh, I'm so fat. And you're like, no, you're not. Like, you know, and people help you dismiss that.
Oh, so you had this sisterhood there.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And that's the internal voice that I need to bring to myself. I need to have that, what would my teammate or my sister say to me? They'd be like, Courtney, don't be ridiculous. You know, love yourself. You're squishy now. That's great. That's fun. You know, or whatever. Like, who cares? Mm. You know?
Okay. So my last question, if you have any favorite saying or quote about being a woman?
I do. I'm smiling because it's my favorite new phrase this year. And it's very simple. And I wish I could remember where it came from because I feel like I read so much. But it's, try to be more of a human being than a human doing. Because if you can be a human being, you can be that person that sits on the park bench and can stare out at the ocean and be fine. You can be eating a beautiful croissant with a coffee and just be like in ecstasy, like, this is just so lovely. You can be present. But in our busy lives, in my busy life, I think this would resonate with most women. It's just that those mindful moments aren't there. And I think the human doing, Courtney, is trying to distract herself. I don't think it's comfortable just sitting and being, and I'm trying to become at peace with that. And I think that's, so that's my been my advice to myself all year.
Excellent. Thank you, Courtney. Thank you very much for sharing your story. And I hope you will enjoy the rest of the day and your photo shoot.
Thank you so much. This is so fun. I can't wait to see what magic wand Leora has been working with.
If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a K-S. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.